Just to explain a little background, I have no NIMBY-ish instincts whatsoever. I come from South Wales, and so, broadly speaking, if you haven't got a slag heap outside your window, you chalk it up as a bonus. In fact, I think that one of the few things to commend High Speed 2 is its capacity for annoying the population of the Chilterns. However, I come to you actually fresh from Manchester, where I've just travelled for the day. Perfectly acceptable train journey. I left at about 20 past 10. I returned, leaving at about 4 o'clock. And what baffles me to an extent, I was the only one of the panel actually to be early, intriguingly, what baffles me to an extent is why we want to spend £40 billion reducing in duration the only part of that journey that isn't crap, which is the bit where you're actually sitting on the train, clearing your email inbox and getting on with actually fairly useful work. This, to me, seems absolutely baffling. But I must say, impressed by the fact that just during my three-hour sojourn in Manchester, the fact that they had a London businessman in their midst seemed to make everybody in Manchester just a tiny bit richer, because apparently that's the logic of how this system actually works. I was gratified by that. But actually, my objections don't lie so much in the fact that I think this is a bad answer. I think it's an answer to a very bad question. I spend quite a lot of my time as an advertising person studying behavioural and decision biases, largely so that we can manipulate them, to be absolutely honest. One of the things I do is notice when you get a series of these in concatenation, when they're all in combination. Here you have, I think, thinking behind this is riddled with behavioural biases. First of all, the question is fundamentally wrong. The question should never be, should we spend £40 billion on a high-speed rail line? It should be, for example, how could we best solve the problem of division of wealth in the country? Start with that question. Maybe it's how could we best spend £40 billion on transport infrastructure? How might we spend £10 billion on transport infrastructure? Those are reasonable questions. Do not ask your family, should we spend £5,000 on a holiday to Barbados? That is not a question. The assumption from them will be, if you don't go to Barbados, you will get nothing. Here there is no talk of the opportunity costs. What are we not getting as a result of spending this money? That seems to be dishonest. The question, by and large, in justifying High Speed 2 is posed to large engineering firms. Now, information on smoking that's funded by the tobacco industry generally is viewed with some suspicion. Nassim Taleb makes the point, never ask your barber whether you need a haircut. It seems to me that these organisations are fairly skilled at working out cases for grandiose engineering projects from which they may be the beneficiaries. But it is fundamentally the wrong question. No one is asking the question, what about low-speed rail? There are huge advantages to low-speed rail. The trains can travel closer together and they can actually stop at intermediate stations to let people off and on. One of the reasons I do feel sorry for the people of the Chilterns is they have to suffer this level of disruption. But the poor buggers don't even get a station out of it. If they actually want to go to Manchester, they have to travel 60 miles in the wrong direction, go to Euston, make a tedious journey along to London's worst station, and then travel all the way back again. This seems ridiculous. There are also biases which I think are the product of journalism, and I think we have to ask this question really sincerely, OK? First of all, there is a weird current underfoot that no government can ever backtrack or U-turn on anything because that is branded a failure. That is a terrible catastrophe. Governments, when new figures come to light, should change their minds all the time. There's also a problem, which is governments can't fail. Now, I have aesthetic objections to this scheme, actually. Which is, I'm in favour of government doing two things. Really, really banal, useful things that are simple and effective, and heroic things. You know, broadly speaking, collecting the rubbish or invading France. I'm content with either of those two. What this project to me seems to be is somewhere in the middle. It doesn't advance technology at all. If you said, would you like to spend $4 billion investigating Elon Musk's Hyperloop scheme, which can apparently travel from Los Angeles to San Francisco in 35 minutes in a kind of vacuum tube, that is new technology which advances the sum of human knowledge. It might fail, but that's okay. Nearly all progress will involve some degree of acceptance of failure. That's just a fact we have to acknowledge. That is an interesting thing to do, and I would accept this. What this is doing is buying off-the-shelf French and Japanese technology so that the money is largely funding technological capabilities which already exist, derived from countries whose geography is simply better suited to the technology. There's no psychology in this. I made myself briefly famous by pointing out that actually you could have achieved the same effect, really, of High Speed 1 at far less than £6 billion by simply putting Wi-Fi on the trains. There is still no Wi-Fi on the trains. I made a similar mischievous point that actually you could have spent £1 billion, hired all of the world's top male and female supermodels, got them to walk up and down the Eurostar handing out free Chateau Petrus. You would have saved yourself £5 billion and people would have asked for the trains to be slowed down. But the psychology is very poor. If you take the journey from Paris to Lyon, previously before the TGV, it was 4 hours. That meant you had to stay overnight. It was a tedious journey. It was a long, boring journey. 2 hours, which is what the TGV brings that journey down to, that is qualitatively, fundamentally different. You could leave Lyon, do a day's business in Paris, have a brief extramarital dalliance, and be home in time for a needlessly over-elaborate meal. That is, in human terms, a significant step change. Today, my trip to Manchester involves what we business people call, it's a technical unit of time, called a day out of the office. 25 years and £40 billion later, my trip to Manchester will involve a day out of the office. Nothing has fundamentally changed about that journey. Lyon to Paris is also a perfect duration of a train, if you watch people on the French TGV, because 2 hours is slightly longer than the time needed to watch a Hollywood blockbuster, which makes it absolutely perfect as a unit of time for train travel. The other behavioural biases include the fact that trains, for some bizarre reason, are the only form of transport it is acceptable to like in middle-class circles. You know, I quite like performance cars, but I keep this really, really quiet. Nobody in a middle-class dinner party conversation will ever mention coach travel under any circumstances, when if you really wanted to benefit the poor, you'd subsidise the megabus. Let's be absolutely candid about this. Not a form of transport largely used by the rich. So there's an awful lot of behavioural bias here which alarms me. Another thing that alarms me is the projections of continued growth, which are extrapolations from growth over the last 10 years. The main reason for growth in rail travel over the last 10 years, if you accept or possibly don't accept the contentious view that actually privatisation improved it quite a bit, which I know is frankly about the most embarrassing thing you can say, but possibly true. There are other factors. Other complementary technologies, things like the ability to type on board or consume media on board, the fact that actually yield management brought a sensible pricing structure and helped solve the problem of overcrowding. That was a computer technology, not a rail technology. The fact that actually 12 years ago you couldn't even buy a rail ticket from a machine, so actually while you were queuing to make your journey, you'd probably miss about two outbound trains in the first place. Or the fact that before the internet, it was actually impossible to find out what trains were running or when, or whether they were delayed. So a lot of technology has conspired to make rail travel more attractive, which has nothing to do with rail technology at all. So to extrapolate this recent growth and assume it's naturally the product not of not doing things very badly, but the product of a kind of innate, ever-growing desire to travel. Travel does not have infinite benefits. There are diminishing marginal utilities. You know, there is a limit to our appetite for travel. We ought to actually recognise that. But finally, I promised in my Spectator article that I would demonstrate how you could reduce the journey time by, frankly, about an hour in each direction for a cost of £50,000. So I better tell you, I travelled to Manchester and back today. You buy a ticket, unless you work for a mad organisation like the BBC or the government, which pays full price second class fares. Okay? What you do is you buy a thing called an advance ticket. The advance ticket, mine was first class, here we are, at £51 up to Manchester first class. I always go first class because since the government expenses scandal, there's always a risk in second you'll be seated next to an MP. Now, because if I miss this train, I will lose my £51 and have to pay the full fare of about £190. I am utterly paranoid about doing so. I therefore leave Kent about 2.5 hours before my train's due to leave, leave an insane margin of error, which means I stand around for 1 hour and 10 minutes on Euston Station, effectively doing nothing, while 4 trains leave, which I'm not allowed to board. Simply create a mobile phone app that allows me to pay £5 and board an earlier train if capacity is available. There's no reason in yield management, EasyJet allows this, why you shouldn't allow people to board earlier trains. Later trains are different. I won't go into the details.
Well, you haven't got time, anyway.
In which case, In which case, cut this idea, create a mobile phone app which would have saved actually an hour and 20 minutes of my journey time today, and rebuild the Euston Arch modelled on plans seen in The Lady Killers. It'll make much more difference in improving our journey. Thank you very much indeed.
Rory Sutherland.